Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we both welcome you back to the New World next week. We're glad you are back joining us. We were off last week. James was traveling the world, doing amazing work in Malaysia. But we're back here, and it is the New World next week. And of course, you can find all the information at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, let's begin by taking a look at the political turmoil going on in Egypt. And we'll begin from the Christian Science Monitor, Egypt's political turmoil, dimming chances of democratic transition. Remember when there was so-called Egypt transition process, an orderly series of democratic steps to set the country on a better path than the one it left behind? It went like this: a short period of military rule to be followed by parliamentary and presidential elections, a drafting of a new constitution, and a referendum to ratify it. Well, the notion of an orderly process has been in question for some time. Military rule lasted far longer than promised. The promised new parliament has still not arrived, and Egypt is in many ways more tumultuous today than it was in the heady days of January and February 2011, when millions threw off their fears of the police state and pushed Hosni Mubarak out of power. And events of the past few days have seemed to have settled it. Egypt's process is now an ad hoc chaotic mess, and the prospects for a democratic order emerging from this still rolling transition have dimmed substantially. To see that, all you had to do was look at the rowdy hundreds of thousands who took to the streets of Cairo and other Egyptian cities, in some places sacking the local offices of the Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamist movement that propelled President Mohamed Morsi to power earlier this year. And I had tweeted out, James, at Media Monarchy a couple of days ago from the Wall Street Journal, Morsi tries to calm Egypt after his edict, essentially saying, oh, these new powers are just temporary. And I said, oh, that's what all you power-mad dictators tell all the plebs. It's just temporary, right, James?
Of course, exactly. So my hat's off to the people of Egypt for not sitting down and taking this and for actually continuing the process of revolution, because it's a point I've made on my podcast before, is that what revolution really happened in Egypt if the military dictatorship continues and or if Morsi or whoever takes power just assumes all these dictatorial powers. No revolution really happened at all. So it is good to see people continuing to stick to this and continuing through with what has to be basically holding whatever self-proclaimed leader comes to power, holding their feet to the fire and making sure that they don't follow through with this and continue with Mubarak's ways under a different guise. And it's good to see they're doing things like sacking Muslim Brotherhood offices, etc., and really seeming to stick to their guns on this. So I think I was highly skeptical about what the revolution against Mubarak really meant, but if they continue along with this and hopefully actually get this new constitution into place and in a form that actually does offer some real change for the Egyptians, then it will have accomplished something. So I think this is actually a hopeful sign, and hopefully we won't see just another crackdown and the Egyptians with their tails back between their legs just taking it. So again, it's hopeful, it's positive. We'll see what develops.
I was surprised just to even see that it was all the way back, nearly now 2 years ago. So in the related links, we'll include also from Russia Today, they've got amazing footage and photographs. Leave, leave, anti-Morsi protesters chant as police respond with tear gas. 200,000 Egyptians protest as Pharaoh Morsi digs heels in over power grab. So you can see even, the language using things like Pharaoh. It's like this goes back a long way and, of course, reverberates to our very present day, James. Our second story, we will move to our good friend Michael Vail of StratRisks.com has an article, and it's been a while since we've heard from these guys. You know, it's again, the faces may change here in the States, but of course the power structure behind those faces doesn't really change. But we haven't heard from our good friends at Blackwater in a while. Blackwater founder Eric Prince seeks Asian investors for South Sudan defense projects. A former leading U.S. defense contractor has selected South Sudan as his next market. Eric Prince has begun investing to enhance the defense of the new Republic of South Sudan, which seceded from Sudan in July 2011. Prince, the founder of Blackwater, said he regards South Sudan as part of an emerging market in Africa. Eric Prince said, quote, "We are the search radar for Asian investors in Africa. Africa is so far the most unexplored part of the world, and I think China has seen a lot of promise in Africa," Prince said. In an interview with the South China Morning Post, Prince said his new company, Frontier Resource Group, FRG, was seeking Asian investors. Earlier this month, Prince arrived in Hong Kong for meetings with potential Chinese investors and partners. In 2012, Beijing said it would provide $20 billion in loans to Africa by 2015. But the problem is, if you go alone, you bear the country risk on your own, Prince said. You have to get support and maintenance there. In 2012, the United States issued a regulation that allowed defense and security exports to South Sudan. Industry sources said Juba was discussing the procurement of air defense and artillery systems with unnamed U.S. contractors. Prince, this is the point to kind of get to, I think, James, now based in the United Arab Emirates, said FRG, again, the Frontier Resource Group, which raised at least $100 million for projects in Africa, could help protect energy assets in South Sudan. So, James, this was something I think we have discussed recently. You can kind of see major corporations. They may seem as though they're rah-rah pro-American, but they're rah-rah power and money. And they see which way the winds blow. And folks like Eric Prince knew that the you know, reactionary right-wing Bush regime wouldn't go on forever and that they would have to shift and move. They're still doing the same thing, but they ultimately go, oh, well, okay, maybe the American military empire isn't where I want to put all my eggs. I'm going to hop over to this other hot bastion. So, you know, guys like Eric Prince, who I believe are also, of course, you know, fundamentalist, you know, Christians and reactionary, they don't care about America. They'll leave at the drop of a dime to go to somewhere else to where they can keep rolling the power game.
Well, that's exactly right, but I'm not sure if Eric Prince is vastly misreading the situation or if I am, because it seems really bizarre to me that he's going to China to get funds for the defense of South Sudan, because my take on it is that South Sudan was really created as a response to China's presence in Africa and its close relations to the Sudanese government. And people might remember 5 or 6 years ago, back when Darfur was the big cause celeb, literally, with George Clooney and all those people lining up to shed crocodile tears over what was happening there. What that was really about and why it was a big deal is because of the vast Sudanese oil reserves, which happened to be right there in that Darfur area. And when South Sudan was created, and created as a U.S. client puppet state, a U.S.-Israeli client puppet state in the region, it was seen to be, by most analysts, I think, to be that response, the way that that America could get its foot in the door of those Sudanese oil reserves, even as China was cozying up to the Sudanese government. So it's bizarre to me that he'd be going to China to get money for South Sudan, because it seems to me that South Sudan was the exact opposite side of where China is. So I don't know if there's something else going on here, or if this is some kind of, I don't know, racketeering thing that he's doing. I don't know. But at any rate, it's interesting to watch this development. And you're exactly right. The chess pieces don't care, you know, whether it's Team America or Team China or who it is, as long as the money's coming in the door. And that's exactly what we have to expect in coming decades as U.S. unipolar power starts to wane into global multipolar universe. I think we'll see more of this from a lot of different corporations that people have thought of as American in the past.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Very much so. So I guess our third story, and again, we'll actually include related links and a flashback, James, to your own coverage back in July of 2011, when Sudan, or rather South Sudan, split and became their own nation. All of that will be provided, and again, I always have to fit in at some point. Follow the links. Don't take our word for anything. Go do more research for yourself. And again, we'll try and lay out a little bit of the path for you. But I think our third and final story this week, James, again, kind of reiterates the faces may change, but again, the power structure behind those faces doesn't really care. Just a handful of hours ago from allgov.com, Obama team made attempt to solidify drone policy in the event of a Romney win. months before the election, President Barack Obama, or Barry Satora, whatever you'd like to call him, his national security team began formulating a standing policy and protocol for when drones should be used to attack terrorists and others in case Mitt Romney won the presidency. The White House wanted to ensure there were distinct procedures and standards in place for Romney, so there would be little guessing for how and when to carry out such strikes. Quote, "There was concern that the levers might no longer be in our hands," said a White House official, speaking on condition of anonymity. Mr. Obama did not want to leave an amorphous program to his successor. Obama ordered the writing of a formal rulebook for drone strikes, according to the New York Times, last summer when he couldn't be certain of winning re-election. Now that Obama has secured his second term in office, the process of institutionalizing the drone attacks will continue, but at a slower pace. Within the administration, there are disagreements over how often drones should be utilized. The Department of Defense and Central Intelligence Agency favor greater latitude to carry out strikes, wrote Scott Shane in the New York Times, while the Department of Justice and the State Department, as well as the president's counterterrorism advisor, John Brennan, prefer more restraint. The first such targeted killings by the U.S. took place in 2002. Since Obama first took office, there have been more than 300 drone strikes that have caused the death of about 2,500 people. The New York Times and the American Civil Liberties Union have filed lawsuits seeking release of the secret legal opinions that serve as the justification for these operations, which remain officially classified. James, there's any number of parts and angles that we could start to pick apart. John Brennan, of course, being tipped as possibly the new head of the Central Intelligence Agency. He's also the one mentioned in one of the latest Obama executive orders about sort of making this Homeland Security and private, you know, the private sector council, you know, working more closely together. John Brennan's the head of that. He's the guy who essentially outed the drone program in the first place. He's the guy who talks about the kill lists. So folks like John Brennan are one of the bigger devils behind a lot of what's going on. I find it interesting that it's talking about the DOD and the CIA versus the DOJ and the State Department. Again, all just fundamentally corrupt, you know, organizations to the bone. And so when we see them fighting against each other, that should, I think, kind of make us all nervous. I also see the specter of what recently happened with Petraeus, where you had the FBI investigating the CIA and all of these things, again, where the groups don't work together, and ultimately the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing. And when that's going on, I think we should all be really nervous, because those situations are usually what precipitate massive catastrophic events like new Pearl Harbors, right, James?
Exactly. I think you're spot on with that analysis, but I agree, we have to be nervous about this, and I certainly cock my eyebrow at the idea that, yeah, the DOJ is really against the CIA here on the drone strike program. My reading on this is that, yes, there are differences, and we have to understand that the government is not one monolithic agency. There's lots of different departments and lots of different people with different agendas working in different ways. But at the same time, I think this is really just putting it into that type of dialectic where we're going to see, oh, yes, the CIA is arguing for this full-blown total strike program and blah, blah, blah. But the cooler heads like John Brennan are arguing we should only have targeted assassination and blah, blah, blah. And it's going to take the option of getting rid of this drone program completely off the table. It'll be the argument between what type of drone strikes, what type of assassinations, what type of illegal extrajudicial killings we want to have. And on that note, of course, we see the hardwiring into policy of the presidential kill list, and they're expanding that out. I can't remember what the latest term is, the disposition matrix or whatever they're calling it now, and they're trying to come up with all these policies. So we are seeing the hardwiring of all of this. Absolutely, 10 years ago, all of this would have been unthinkable, and now it's just plain mundane reality. So this is how it works, this is how it functions, and exactly right, no matter whether Obama or Romney won the presidency, it would have continued in one form or another. So we have to be aware of this. We have to be wary of people like John Brennan, who is supposedly going to be the cooler head and who may be the next director of the CIA. Who knows? So there's a lot going on under the surface here, and people have to continue their resistance to this policy, even as it becomes hardwired into formality.
You know, and I would say, James, we'd have to kind of dig back through the archives to kind of track all of the stories that we've covered here on New World Next Week. But I think we've done it, and I believe we've pointed it out too, that over the last probably now year and a half, we've pretty much documented the complete normalizing of drones, at least in the Western world, where, again, they've been able to change the discussion of should we even be doing this to, well, how many should we have? Should they be armed? Or, you know, that becomes the debate. I think it's also interesting, James, the question of with Petraeus and Obama and that whole story as an almost sort of 7 days in May scenario, folks, if you remember that book and film, where this could have been actually some sort of military coup-style operation. And there's been recent memos of Obama essentially saying to all these generals and staff, you know, don't F with me. So I think there's aside from the soap opera of it, there's fascinating and dangerous and scary things going on. One last thing I'll note, James, on the drones as we wrap up this episode of New World Next Week. Folks may know I put the Media Monarchy podcast on indefinite hiatus. I went to work as the producer of Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis. Coming up on the show tonight, that's November 29th, Thursday in the States, we're going to have the one and only Freeman on the show to discuss the normalization of drones as well as the kill lists and so very much more. So I'll include a link to that for folks.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to that discussion. It's an important topic. Not a lot of people are talking about it, so hopefully this discussion will not fade away as it becomes hardwired into policy. All right, James, excellent picks for this week. Thanks again for all your work.
All right, man. Thank you. Take care.